little music to start this week. On the Shore is back. Wanted to do a little weekend baseball edition. Football eats up so much time, Max, because it is the premier sport in the United States. I mean, that's any baseball fan would have to admit that now. But baseball's definitely still the pastime because it's a way to pass time. It's a way to, sit around every day and just turn on a baseball game and get updated every day. And I think that that's something we really missed about baseball was the grind. I didn't realize that. I thought the 60-game season might be more attractive, but I really do believe that the full, okay, we're going to be playing baseball all summer. Tune in tonight, tune in the next night, wins, losses. It doesn't feel so intense, is a little more attractive and fits the game a little better. And I think that might be a reason that baseball ratings are up. It's in the right time of year now. People have actually missed it. They can go to the ballpark, and we finally have that baseball experience of 162, the March back. And I think that was undervalued in my mind 2 to 3 years ago.
Isn't it ironic that the 60-game season was almost more exhausting than...
Oh, it was horrible.
It just was painful. And a part of it was...
So much pressure.
There was just so much pressure on everyone. So every time you turned a game on, you almost felt this must-win mentality for no matter who it was. And then if you were watching your team and you felt like they weren't taking a must-win mentality to the game, you get frustrated with them because it's a 60-game season. Why are you throwing out, your worst reliever in a 4-run game? You could still get back into this thing. You've got to think about it as a win every day type of thing. Whereas now, like you said, you can enjoy the game. There's fun. And that's like even this year, position players pitching was becoming like a major problem. People did not like that it was happening. It's happened a couple times this year, and it's almost been entertaining again because it's like, oh, it's okay that a team that's 14-15 and is down by 10 runs in the ninth inning gave up on today's game. That's an okay thing.
And everybody wants their starters' innings to be lower this year.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, you have no idea how their body's going to respond after the type of time off they had and then the way the last season ended and how many innings they threw last year. Everybody wants to be really, really careful with their arms. And I think that's probably a good idea. But baseball, that's the one element baseball's missing right now. Because whatever, the strikeout home run conversation, they're going to move the mound back or something in a couple years. That'll turn. I still think baseball's fun with... I hate a lot of strikeouts, but whatever. It's happening. I'm not really worried about that. What I do miss and what I think the game really needs is that when I tune into games in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, I never see starters. Ever. You never see starters. I mean, how many times in the early 2000s, how many times throughout the early history of baseball was the starting pitcher position so much more impactful? Because when you're tuning into a late ball game, flipping around the radio in the old times or watching MLB TV in the modern times, and you're tuning in late into a ball game, 7th inning, 3-3 tie, and it's still the workhorse on the mound. And he's on his 99th pitch, and he's going to throw 120. And he's going to get through the 7th, 8th inning. You might even push him to 130 pitches. I think that's what baseball really misses. But these guys are throwing so hard now, I don't even know if that's possible anymore. And everybody's going for strikeouts and not pitching to contact. So maybe it's just going to be rare forever, but I hope that we can get back to that somewhat. Because starting pitchers can be like quarterbacks. They got the ball in their hand. They're important. And if we're not seeing them pitch 7th, 8th, and 9th innings, they kind of lose their impact to me.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about kind of an example of what it looks like when you want to go deep into a ball game, Dallas Keuchel the other day had a start. He's normally into the 6th inning at a minimum, but he threw 7 innings. His longest start of the season, it was against the Reds. It ended up being a 1-0 loss. He did not give up a run. But the way that he did it was that he struck out one batter. He walked 3. Through 7 innings of baseball, gave up only 2 hits. Balls were in play, right? He's a ground ball pitcher, has always been a ground ball pitcher. I was lucky enough to watch him a lot down in Houston with the Houston Astros before he came to Chicago. And he was always ground ball pitcher. And if you go look at the pitchers in Major League Baseball recent history who've been workhorses, it's going to be ground ball pitchers. It's going to be guys who throw to contact. And if you look at Keuchel's numbers in the seasons that, he was a Cy Young Award winner in 2015, the guy threw 232 innings. And in those 232 innings, he struck out 216. But then the next season that he threw over 200 innings was in 2018 in Houston. His ERA was 3.74 that season. 204 innings, struck out only 153 batters, pitching to contact, right? He struck out only 17 so far this season for the White
Sox.
So
dangerous to pitch to contact.
And 3.79 ERA.
Nowadays.
It is scary.
Because, I mean, these guys, there's so many power bats. Not in the fact that they hit a lot of home runs and that that number is up, but they're so explosive that the more you live in the zone with these guys nowadays, there's just so many guys like, listen, I know Jock Peterson's been pretty horrible, but man, if he connects on one, he's hitting at 480 feet. There's so many more of those guys that if you're pitching to contact a lot, you're prone to giving up three bombs. You know, you've got a lot of great pitches, but three pitches, you left a little too much in the zone, and three really talented guys hit it 400-plus feet, and you give up five runs.
Well,
and, you know, and that's kind of like, that's the fear of pitching to contact. You know, stuff like that has happened. I think Luis Castillo experiences that in Cincinnati. Maybe we've seen a little turn, and his changeup's not working, and maybe pitching to contact. You know, it's going to be an interesting debate over the next couple of years. I just don't think we're seeing the clear picture about starter depth and how long these guys can go or should go or what teams think they should go because everybody's so worried about health right now. But let's turn our attention to Chicago. The Cubs, the White Sox, that's our baseball episode. We want to dive into both of these teams, both from a broad sense and a narrow sense on the 2021 season because, you know, Max, you've written papers on the 40-game and the 20-game rule, your idea that that's when you should start judging a baseball season. Now, this is an idea shared widely across Major League Baseball. Some even want to go to 60 games before they judge, but I think that's kind of lame waiting to 60 games.
Well,
I think 20 games is a very solid initial indication. 40 games is a firm, okay, we know where everybody stands.
Yeah, well, and if you look at what happens at 40 games, you have to go look at other sports, right? When do you start evaluating the NBA season or when do you start evaluating,
a quarter of the way.
More importantly, like the NFL? You know, 1 in 3 teams, they're not normally going to be a playoff team.
Yep.
Very, very, very rare. 2 and 2, 1 and 3, very different. And in baseball, even though it feels like a lot more games, the idea is that the difference between 18 and 22 and 21 and 19 is actually really big. And a part of the reason for that is because if you go look at numbers in baseball, Pythagorean is a great way to indicate what a team's record should be, right? So your number of runs scored, runs allowed, there's an algorithm that's set up in baseball where you can say, okay, this team scored, you know, 800 runs. They gave up 600. They should be a 95 win baseball team. That's about the area there. So if you look right now, you had the standings page pulled up. If you could, well, actually here, yeah. Let's take a look at the White Sox. This is a perfect example. So if you look at the White Sox, they're in a really great spot because they're 16 and 13 and they've scored 143 runs. They've given up 107. Their Pythagorean win-loss is 18 and 11, which is actually kind of ironic for as much as everyone has complained about Tony La Russa. This is actually an indication of it's an example of the truth because another stat that I came up with that was published in the Society of American Baseball Research was managers adjusted wins. So technically his stat right now would be -3. So his decision-making, arguably, based upon the Pythagorean win and loss, would be that he has subtracted 3 wins from the White Sox. Whereas you look at the Cubs right now, and you know their manager, David Ross, who is thought of as a pretty solid manager. Everyone likes David Ross in baseball. He has not cost the Cubs a game, technically. Their Pythagorean win and loss.
He's a pretty standard decision maker.
15-60, absolutely.
You're never like, David, what? Now, that can kind of lose you some edges there.
Absolutely.
Like, here's the thing about Tony La Russa. He's made a lot of bad decisions. But I guarantee you, especially after this embarrassing stuff just happened with him in the media where it looks like he doesn't know what he's doing and it looks like he doesn't care.
He didn't know about
because he didn't know what he was doing and he didn't care enough to listen to that meeting in spring training. I think that a little bit of an embarrassment for a man of that age where he starts to feel like he needs to learn the game again, there is going to be a stretch this year where Tony La Russa makes 4 to 5 consecutive decisions that nobody's going to talk about. That's going to win the White Sox games that a manager like David Ross wouldn't win because David Ross is kind of playing the standard playbook.
And let me summarize real quick, just for our listeners who don't know what happened. White Sox and Reds were playing the other day, and there's the last out recorded becomes the runner at second base in extra innings now. And first of all, La Russa bringing in Liam Hendricks from the bullpen originally called him in, then went back to the dugout because he was trying to do a double switch, wanted to check with his bench coach to make sure he's doing it right. There's a video of Hendricks running halfway in, running halfway back, then running back out to the mound. So that in of itself was a mess. And then they put Hendricks out on the mound because the pitcher was the last recorded out. Well, a reporter asked him why he did that, because he could have put the next position player back in the lineup. Because you don't have to put a pitcher out there. Now, I don't want to fault La Russa horribly here because, again,
He's an
American League manager, and ALNL rules have always, I mean, we've seen very good managers lose their DH in an NLAL game at an AL stadium because they pull something stupid. And again, that's one of the reasons baseball just needs to instigate the DH across the board.
Please. It was so nice. That was the one really positive thing about 2020.
Absolutely. So, but anyways, we're talking about those mistakes with La Russa, but also at the same time, I do want to give him a touch of credit here for a second to our Chicago listeners, to our friends who have kind of seen these news stories. One thing I give him credit for that I don't think everyone else does is that the White Sox lineup has not been completely optimal all year long. They have not been at full strength yet. Right. They have not. They've been close to it. But Tim Anderson banged up Eloy Jimenez. Now you have who just went down with
Robert.
Right. And so you go look at this lineup.
They had to sign a good one for some outfield depth.
Absolutely. And then the catching situation is interesting because you have Yasmani Grandal, who has caught 20 games, but Zach Collins has been catching, and that's also been interesting. His story is kind of one of the more interesting ones in baseball, just as Yermin Mercedes has been. And guess what? Lineup construction matters. If you're going to have a winning record so far into this season, lineup construction has to be a part of it. And right now, up and down, the White Sox are scoring runs. They're in most of their ball games.
Plus 36 run differential.
Right. And so he's still mismanaged at times, absolutely. And you can't give him credit for Yermin Mercedes. Like, that's just a really exciting late find. And it's a guy who
had to literally go 5 for 5 in his one opportunity to keep playing.
And the sad thing about Yermin Mercedes, too, is that he still is in a tough spot because he can't play the field. So you have very little flexibility with him there.
Yeah, but with these injuries now, I think he's going to find his way in the lineup a lot.
And not only will he find his way in the lineup, he's going to have to play in the field. I don't know if they're going to figure out a way to get him into left field or if they're going to figure out a way to get him over at first base and forces Abreu into the outfield a little bit. They're going to have to be really creative. They're lucky enough that the pitching has been phenomenal. And I know you were looking at those numbers earlier. But again, I don't want to get on Tony La Russa entirely yet because he's done creative things. And like you said, one of the things you've enjoyed is sacrifice bunting, is sack hits. Right now, the White Sox lead baseball in sacrifice hits. So that includes sacrifice bunts and sacrifice flies. And at the end of the day, moving runners over late in ball games, those are important things. And it's things that are lost on baseball.
It's really been more how he's handled. I think he's trying to feel out this pitching staff. I don't think Tony La Russa has a feel, one, for the modern pitcher. It's a 10-year gap between managers. I mean, the last time we saw a gap that big was when Jim Riggleman retired for the Nationals in the middle of the season.
Well, it's like he left Lucas in way too long one day, admitted it afterwards, and then taking Keuchel out the other day in the NL game. I think he might regret that afterwards because Keuchel, even though you don't want guys pitching in the eighth or ninth this year, Keuchel had been so efficient, and Keuchel historically has been a workhorse.
I still think this is a 95-98 win team.
Yeah.
And that's where I stand on the Chicago White Sox. I think this is still a really good baseball team. I could really care. Listen,
16 and 13 is that indication. We're 29 games in. They got 11 to go to get to that 40 game mark we just mentioned.
Yep. And this is why, because Max has done so much research on that stat, the 40 game mark, and he's shown it to me and it works. And if you go year by year, go look at the 40 game mark.
From 2000 until I think 2019, when I first did the study, it was 76% of teams who had a winning record at the 40 game mark made the playoffs. And then additionally, on top of that, 97% of the teams who were in the playoffs had a winning record. So essentially, you've got a really good chance, right? Three out of four teams who have a winning record at the 40-game mark are going to be a playoff
team. Yeah, and the way you apply that stat to me is at the 40-game mark, you go through, and everybody that's got a winning record, they are in the playoff bubble now.
Absolutely.
They are teams that are... that can certainly make the playoffs. In fact, it's more than likely that they will make the playoffs based on past evidence. Now, there's always different examples. Baseball's crazy. We get that. But having such an early season indication and having it statistically backed up makes this next 11-game stretch critically important for both the Chicago White Sox and the Cubs. And I really think this is where we might see these two teams separate. I think the White Sox are going to ascend here over the next 11 games. I think they're going to have at least a 7-4 stretch. But what are the Cubs going to do? What is this north side? I mean, this is on the shore. We're a little closer to Wrigley Field right now than Comiskey. What are the Cubs going to be? And does it even matter? If it doesn't even matter, because the Cubs are one of those teams, they would be in the 24% that have a winning record after 40 games, but they're going to sell the farm come July, so it won't really matter what they were at 40 games because they'll be a totally different team in August and September.
But very, very possible. And that's why the 40-game mark is kind of an indicator, because then you say to yourself, once you get to that point, who are buyers and who are sellers? And so the Cubs could be 21-19.
But they've already chosen their path.
Exactly.
Darvish is not a Cub.
But the crazy thing about the Cubs is that they've got three games against the Pirates, and then they get two against the Indians. That's tough. But then they get to face three games against the Tigers. I mean, they've got a chance to win. Let's say they don't sweep. Well, let's say they sweep either the Pirates or the Tigers, and then they win one of those series, and they're 5-1. Let's say they sneak out and split with the Indians, and they're 6-2. Over an 8-game span, heading into a 4-game series against the Nationals. They've got a winning record on the line, right? And again, that's why with the Cubs, it's almost frustrating, because you look at their schedule and it doesn't even matter. Because again, like you said, they've already decided what they're going to be. The White Sox, on the other hand, you look at them, just to summarize my last point on them before we fully jump into the Cubs. You know, in the next 11 games, do you know who the White Sox play 7 games against? Kansas City Royals.
Oh, yeah. It's a big stretch.
I mean, so that right there will probably decide both the Royals and the White Sox season. Right there, that will probably...
At least the initial path they start.
It helps to really decide the division early
in
the year.
It's like in the Kentucky Derby. That first turn, you're going to kind of establish where everybody's at. That doesn't mean somebody can't make a run from the back or somebody can't fall off. I remember it's first time my fiance got to watch the Kentucky Derby, and we actually put a little cheddar on the horse she picked.
There you go.
It was like 25-1, and that horse was in the lead, and she was like, oh my gosh, and the horse finished in last place in 75 legs behind because he just ran out of juice. He just couldn't go anymore. So like sometimes that stuff's going to happen.
Yeah.
But again, if you watch most Kentucky Derbies, it's a 4-turn race.
Yep.
After the first turn, much like baseball, we're talking about the quarter mark of the season. Where are you in that first turn can really be a good indication of who could win the race.
Also, for Cubs fans, I think the thing that probably will be most frustrating for the entire season is that what happens in their season is based a lot more on what happens with what the Cardinals are as a team, what the Reds are as a team, what the Brewers are as a team, how bad the Pirates are as a team. It really doesn't have everything to do with what the Cubs do, because we already know what they're not going to do. You know, they're not going to buy. If anything, they're going to sell. Chris Bryant could very well be gone by the trade deadline, even if he's an MVP candidate, which is just sad. And this is where we get into the topic of conversation that I really wanted to jump into, because I'm lost on it. I don't understand why the Cubs can get away with being a team that is not buying when they have a possible playoff window, when they have a possible World Series window. How come teams like the Dodgers, the Yankees, even the Los Angeles Angels, the Angels just released Albert Pujols. They decided that it was better to pay him $30 million today than it was to pay him $30 million over the rest of the season, right? That's a big buyout. Think about that.
Yeah. I'm just going to write the check. Get out of here.
I will write the check now. Leave. We'll figure the rest out because we don't want you here. So how come all these other teams can get away with being buy? How do the Cubs get away with being sellers? The media around here says things like, oh yeah, the Cubs don't have payroll flexibility. The national media says Cubs don't have payroll flexibility. I mean, are you kidding me? This team has their own TV network, their own radio deal. The stadium is sold out every single time, whether they can put 12,000 fans in it or whether they can put 37,000 fans into it. The ownership group has done a ton of improvements around the stadium. But at the end of the day, why can you not put the same amount of money into the team on the field?
Yeah, even just for this run. And then when they finally do fall off, like, don't preempt the greatest era of Cubs baseball players since, you know, Tinker, Evers, and Chance.
No.
Right? Like, I mean, this is the thing. The city, the North Side, has been waiting for this type of team for freaking 100 years. Yep. And when you finally get it, why not just pour every bit of money into it? And you know what? The fans will love you even if you're a 100-loss team in 3 years.
Absolutely.
Right? Because they were used to that. But this idea that finally, when you reach the precipice, 100 years of being lovable losers and not being able to get the right players and spend the right money, that finally you reach the precipice, you have the team that's been waiting a century to play in that historic stadium, and then you go cheap on them. And it all started in 2015. It all started in 2015 when they're like, hey, let's wait 16 days to call Chris Bryant up.
Absolutely.
Let's wait 16 days to call this guy who could be an MVP candidate possibly in 2015. Let's wait to call this stud up because we're going to buy an extra year of flexibility. Well, now look what they're doing in the extra year of flexibility. It's 2021. It's, remember, when they made the Chris Bryant decision back in 2015, which every media report out there said pissed the guy off. Right there, I came out on a radio show that day back in 2015, and I said, Chris Bryant will not be a Cub in 2022. He's leaving. He's going to the Yankees, going to the Dodgers, getting a big contract, and he's getting out of here because that's how angry he was in 2015. So now this extra year you bought with this superstar, which he's having a damn near MVP campaign right now, with the extra year you bought, you didn't even want to spend money on an ace starting pitcher to try to maybe juice a World Series out of this on the back end? What the hell is wrong with you?
It's pretty incredible.
Like that, like it's just because, okay, who cares if you're 100 losses in 2023? This was the greatest era of Cubs baseball players in a century, and it will be the greatest era of Cubs baseball players for probably the next 20 to 30 years. And you wasted it because you didn't go all in. And that's just going to cost you money in the long run. It's going to make fans a little more angry and upset with the lovable losers thing that made this team money for a century.
Well, and one of the things in baseball that kills me is that there are great examples of teams that don't tank, that compete year in and year out, have won World Series recently, okay? Look at the St. Louis Cardinals. They do not tank. They are a quality organization, have been a quality organization, will be a quality organization for a very long time. Now, part of that is that, yes, you can admit one of the best decisions that organization made was not paying Albert Pujols. However, they had already signed him to a free agent contract, and then he was going back out into free agency, right? So it's a different story than just Chris Bryant in year six. Very different story. Additionally, when you look at teams like the Boston Red Sox, had a couple down years, but they weren't completely mailing it in. My favorite one in recent history is actually right now what's happening with the Kansas City Royals. They made it to the playoffs last year, right? They were World Series champions in 2015, and then everyone thought they were going to sell the farm. Well, they tried to keep pieces together. They had dealt with a lot of injuries. They had 200 lost seasons, but it wasn't because they were trying to mail it in. It wasn't because they were trying to rebuild the minor league system. It was just because of bad luck. And then what did they do? Instead of mailing it in after a couple of 100 lost seasons, they invested last year while everyone else wasn't. They said, we like our team. We think this is going to be a good team. We're going to let certain people walk from our World Series teams, but we're still going to build something special. And now look at what it's turned into this year.
We're going to go into the red.
Andrew Benintendi. Look at that, right?
In baseball, you got to commit to going into the red, especially.
But for a moment, oftentimes that moment buys the green, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And sometimes it's a risk. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's plenty of examples of teams who have gone into the red. I mean, for example, the Cincinnati Reds right now are in a scary position where they feel like they have to make the playoffs this year or it is sell time. because last year killed their books. They'd been holding on to money for a very long time to invest in free agents. They did it last year, and now this year they need the extra playoff revenue. They need the TV deal revenue. They need the revenue of selling jerseys. They need it all. And if they miss the playoffs or if they're not in it 80, 90 games into the year, you're going to see the Reds go through another tough era. And it's almost not even because of themselves. It's just because they got screwed over by a pandemic.
There would be no,
but the Cubs don't have that excuse.
No, there would be no fan base more upset with their team if everybody had to open their books in Major League Baseball. Because isn't Major League Baseball completely closed books?
Yes.
Everybody's closed books.
Yeah. And anything that gets released, they make it look like they're losing money, just like the NBA does, just like all, you know, major. The only
we have a better gauge of what NFL teams bring in because there are conglomerates and revenue sharing and salary floors like that. We can better guess what their operating is, but MLB is very in the dark. We really don't know a lot about these teams' books.
Sure.
And I guarantee you there would be no fan base more pissed off at their ownership than Cubs fans if Major League Baseball had to open their books, because I think they would see, this is not a cheap neighborhood.
No.
Okay. These are not cheap people. These are not people that believe in economic frugality. Just look at rent on the north side, okay? All right? These people aren't exactly, hey, let's be frugal and be, you know. No, these people like making money and they like spending money. And so if they saw what their organization has been doing with their books, I would wager a guess they would be pretty frustrated with the Chicago Cubs.
Yep.
And the way that they operated, especially from 2015 to now, the Chris Bryant era, which when he's going to win a World Series somewhere else, it's going to look really bad. And what it does is it taints the lovable loser aspect of it.
Yep.
And if that ballpark didn't make people cry when they go in there the first time, the Cubs would seriously be in a scary position, given that it's a two-team town. But that ballpark's so incredible that it might not matter for their attendance.
That was the other thing I wanted to bring up, is that, you know, you look down to the South Side and you say, way to go, White Sox. I mean, you have stuck it out with Jose Abreu, a guy that you took a semi-risk on. You know, not everyone was completely sold on him being a great major league player. I don't know anyone who I watch hit the ball harder when he makes contact. I remember the first White Sox game I went to, I think it was a doubleheader. He played both games. It was against the Astros. I think he had 4 hits that day, but he put 6 balls in play, 7 balls in play, and every single ball he hit was just hit hard, right? But stuck it out with him. And the other thing that the White Sox have done is not only have they stuck it out with their prospects, something recently the Cubs have not done, non-tendering certain players, letting certain players go, not giving guys enough play time to develop. It's just starting to get frustrating, all the different things they do. But then the White Sox additionally go out and they add. They've added.
A major market team.
Yeah, and they're not even spending as much money as the Cubs, which I realize is, you know, it's ironic. You know, why criticize the team that's spending more? But it's because that team is trying to actively spend less when the team on the South Side has been actively trying to spend more. And also the contract offers that we've seen
and
come
out. And
they
just went through a rebuild phase.
Absolutely. And they tried to get Castellanos to come there. The Reds won that one. They tried to trade for him originally, and then he ended up over on the north side. But still, you look at the things that the south side team has done, and maybe it's the narrative that they create, or maybe it's the fact that they just look a heck of a lot better, that they get more credit. But still, at the end of the day, when you say trust the system, trust what you're doing, and then it's not turning into wins or it's not turning into production. And I think the even scarier thing is this. We all know that there's an end of the window and an end of the era on the north side coming. But when you go down not even swinging, it's like the Cubs are watching that called third strike right now, you know? And I don't mean the players. I mean the organization.
Yeah.
They're watching the end of the era, and instead of trying to salvage something of it, instead of trying to get one more push, one more run, you know they're going to go through a rebuild phase. That's a fact. It's going to happen. So if we all know that's going to happen, why don't you try and take advantage of what you got while you have it? It's almost like Aaron Rodgers up in Green Bay, right? Take advantage, cherish what you have while you have it, enjoy it, or else it's going to leave you and it's going to sting you and it's going to be frustrating and it's going to be like a Reds fan who watches Aroldis Chapman, Didi Gregorius, you know, Scott Schebler, who, you know, didn't like him that much, but still Schebler, Duvall, you know,
playing
Yasmani Grandal, all these guys who the Reds traded, Johnny Cueto. There was a moment where there was a play in the World Series, right?
And
there
were five
Cincinnati Reds, hitter, pitcher. It was a double play, so second, short, and first.
Yep. And that's what's about to happen with the Chicago Cubs.
Absolutely. Chris Bryant is going to be involved in great things in his future.
Well, if
Kyle Schwarber is no longer in town and he has the potential to be involved in some runs.
I'm just saying it's going to have to be a really well-executed rebuild, and it never is, because prospects, they're just not sure things. That's how baseball is.
Especially in baseball. And look, again, I think everyone looks at the Astros as like this example of, oh, it's okay to tank. Do you have any idea how long they tanked? Like, that's the thing that's even tougher to remember.
And how many picks they had to hit on.
And it was just agonizing and brutal.
And most people would now say they cheated to it.
And now they cheated to it, right? It's just a mess. It's just a real mess. And again, if you look at the teams who are always at the top, even if you take the small market teams, remove the Yankees, remove the Dodgers for a moment. The teams who are always involved, right? The Braves have always been involved throughout the years. They're not always spending the most money in baseball. They have at times, but they're not right now.
Yeah, but the Braves are never bad.
The Phillies, you know, they went through one recent era of bad, but that was after World Series, and now they're in the conversation every year again. And even the Nationals recently have figured out that it's okay to trade pieces as long as you still add, or as long as you don't subtract from certain areas, right? Like, they traded bats, but then they hold on to pitching, right? You've got to hold on to something. Something has to be your anchor, right? You don't want to be the Seattle Mariners, who have no hitters, have no pitchers, have no potential, have no progress, right?
They're an example of how to not do everything. They didn't do a rebuild right. They didn't do spending money right.
And
they didn't do...
And look at a team who's proven in baseball that you've got to bone up and spend the money once you start hitting big. Padres, right? They were never a horrid team. Always around 500. Always one of the biggest problems with the Padres is the division they play in, right? Diamondbacks have always been a very strong team ever since they came into the league. The Dodgers are incredible. The Rockies have a ridiculous amount of offense thanks to that ballpark that they play in.
Rocky's been a decent organization time or two.
I was reading something the other day where somebody said the Rockies aren't going to do anything this year, so they should sign Albert Pujols and just see how many home runs he can hit in that Mile High Stadium.
Oh, my God, what a great idea.
Right?
They don't care right now.
Just let him play.
Have some fun.
Let him play first base, see if he can get to 700 home runs by playing
another 60 games.
You
know, that would 100% happen if there was the universal DH.
Absolutely. Or more importantly, if there was the universal DH, then all of a sudden people have talked about him coming to the Cincinnati Reds. That becomes easier because you have him at first base and you have him DH, right? You have all these things. And that's what I love about, Southside, American League Baseball. I love going to White Sox games because there's so much potential offense. There is no easy out in the lineup. And if it is an easy out, it's still tougher than a pitcher.
Yeah, but and then just...
Also, AL teams aren't pinch hitting with pitchers.
What is going on?
That new thing happening. Why is Jake Arrieta hitting with runners on first and second in the bottom of the ninth?
Top of the eighth. And 3-3 tie, and Jake Arrieta steps into the on-deck circle. He's going to be pinch hitting. What? I just never imagined hearing that sentence from Pat Hughes. And it's just... Well, the Cubs, I don't even want to get excited because there's some potential in this lineup.
Absolutely.
And the rotation is not great, but like, imagine if they kept you Darvish and then just like went way into the red and signed Trevor Bauer, gave him that 1 year, $55 million he would have taken, and then cash in with the Dodgers next year. That's what you do. You say, hey, Trevor, we're going to give you $55 million this year, 1 year deal. You can leave after this year. We're going to take one more big shot at it. And then imagine Bauer, Darvish, Arrieta in the postseason. You've got Kimbrel still on the back end of the bullpen. You've got a frontline guy that's developing quickly in Contreras. You have an MVP possibly in Bryant, a great hitter in Rizzo. And a guy like Jock Peterson's not going to hit like this all year.
No.
It's a World Series team.
But that's why I'm trying to focus less on the Cubs and I'm trying to focus more on the White Sox, because the White Sox make me excited the way I think the Cubs teams a couple of years ago made people excited. It's like this team, this Southside team, has not even reached its potential yet. And Tony La Russa has not reached his potential yet as a manager. There's no way he's going to suck all year. And if he sucks all year, then I guess we're in trouble on that Southside team. But there's no way. There's no way. Right? He's got to turn things around in a moment. And he will. He'll turn them around. But the pitching staff, they have not peaked yet. Hitters have not peaked yet. You're still missing pieces in the lineup. There's still guys who can be impactful and effective. It's going to be a fun year on the South Side. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, and honestly, it's not... I think it'll be a fun year watching what the Cubs do. I think
absolutely.
It's an interesting conversation piece. And
what if they shock us? What if they are buyers? I mean, they could be creating this narrative.
I would love that.
I mean,
I would love, but they need to make, like, that's why there's a lot of pressure on the current players on the roster, because they understand the position the organization is in. And they know, that's why this sweep against the Dodgers was massive, because it gets them to 15-16. And, you know, we come out on the show after they sweep the Dodgers. See, but the Dodgers have been so rough recently.
How about the demand, though, for tickets just because of that sweep? All of a sudden, you go from just before first pitch being able to get two tickets for $6, even when the weather's nice, to suddenly, what, today it's like $50 is the get-in price?
Per, and you got to buy two.
I mean, that's wild. These StubHub people are loving it.
Yeah. I'm not, though. Wanted to go to Wrigley today. Oh, well. We'll still have fun on the shore.
Gonna have to get that press pass.
Hey, man. If we like and share this enough, that's something that we could maybe accomplish. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. This has been On the Shore.